Hey, before we dive into this week's episode, Pat and I want to make sure that you know we have a public Across the Bifrost Discord. We've got content creators from all over the site there. The easiest way to get there is go to Across the Bifrost. Along the top, you should see the menu bar. Click the Discord button, and you'll get a link to join the Discord. We hope to see you all there. Let us know what you want to hear in the podcast. Let us know what crazy ideas you've come up with for this game we love, Marvel Crisis Protocol. All right, without any further ado, here's this week's episode.
Somewhere across the Bifrost, way up high.
Welcome back to the latest episode of Across the Bifrost. My name is Sung Soo, and joining me in a moment, as he always does from across the pond, is my dear friend Pat Dunford. And today, we're going to the Dark Dimension to bargain with Dormammu. But first, Pat, how you doing?
I'm doing great, thanks, TT. I'm looking forward to this episode. Dormammu is one of the most unique and coolest characters in MCP. He's certainly very different to a lot of other stuff, and I'm really happy to revisit him now and talk about his affiliation.
Yeah, we're not a fluff podcast. I've never been a big fan of Dormammu, like, in the comics. But in the movie cameo, he was kind of cool, and I do really like him in MCP. Yep. But Pat, I do want to tell you, if you were stuck in the Dark Dimension, I would escort you to safety. And I thought for Sleaver to Heave It, we could cover Escort to Safety. An old Corset original that I've only ever played in, like, basically a meme game with you. I'm going to read it because I'm guessing a lot of listeners don't know what it is. So it's an unaffiliated reactive card. When an enemy character targets an allied character, another allied character within range 3 of the targeted character may spend 3 power to play this card. Push the targeted allied character towards the other allied character. Oh my god, this is a lot of words. Short. Mm-hmm. If at the end of the push, the targeted character is outside of the attack's range or the attacker's line of sight, the attack action ends. If it's the attacker's activation and the attack did not target multiple characters, they may make another attack action. Or excuse me, another action. It doesn't have to be an attack action. Pat, that was a lot of words. What do you think, Escort to Safety?
Yeah, so another way to look at this is it's the same effect, or at least similar, to abilities like Loki's Trickster, Quicksilver's Can't Catch Me, and it's most similar to Gwen's Lifesaver, right, on Ghost Spider. It has the same effect where you move a character out of range of an attack, and if you're successful and move them out of range or line of sight, then the attack gets cancelled and the attacker gets another action. So it's just like those effects. The big difference, of course, it's on a tactics card, which means you have a lot of flexibility over who uses it and when. And the thing that I really like about this card, the reason I think it's a bit underrated, is that that flexibility can be really tough on your opponents, knowing that at any time you can pull a character away, perhaps to a better spot, keeping them safe from retaliation and potentially denying attacks and interrupting important activations in the process.
Yeah, so going back to our age-old standard, right, it does provide an action, right? It's getting you a short move. Mm-hmm. So it does at least make the cut in that regard. Again, I've liked the card. My issue with it is I've always just felt it's been outclassed by other additions into the game. I do want to talk to you a little bit about a nuance of the card is, how do you feel about refunding the action, right? Because there's definitely times where you don't want to. You want them to make the attack, right?
Right, but when you want to make the attack, you simply don't use the card, right?
Unless you need the movement.
Okay, I mean, there'll be some times when you can pull somebody away and stay in range to get the movement and to be attacked, right?
Correct.
That's pretty core to case, I guess, but it could come up, potentially. If you just need to push yourself a little bit into some terrain or another character or what have you.
Well, if you're going to drop an objective, a lot of times I'll want to take that short movement, right?
Oh yeah, just to say, so the attacker can't retaliate. I think overall, though, the disruption effect that this has on your opponent's activation is pretty big and not to be underestimated. Because in addition to this giving you a short movement, which is somewhat equivalent to an action, as you said, it also does have a disruptive effect on your opponent's turn, where even if that action is refunded, they don't get to make what was presumably their first choice with that action, which was to attack your character. Right, and they have to go to like their, whatever their plan B is, because they chose to spend that action attacking you. Right, presumably that was the best thing they could do with their turn, and you've denied that, they've got an action back, but it's going to be worse than it otherwise was because it's not going to be their first choice in how they use that character.
This functions exactly like Trickster as far as refunding the power cost, correct?
Yeah, you never spend the power of the attack. It's not that it's because refunded, you just don't, it's make that it you don't get to that step.
Yeah, okay. Just making sure.
It also functions in the same way as those other effects, in that it can disrupt superpowers that enhance attacks or other effects that only happen once. So, for example, if Corvus Glaive uses his Glaive's Edge to count blanks on his attack, he does that as an active power, and then that power says, on the next attack, count blanks as successes. He makes this attack, the attack does nothing, he gets a refunded action, but he's still spent all that power on Glaive's Edge to do nothing, right? And there's tons of special rules in the game that work this way. You could use it to deny a Helios laser, or you could use it to deny, in the sense that Helios laser is a card that gives you one attack. And you say, I'm Helios lasering someone, you pull them out of range, you're like, okay, your Helios laser's spent, you can't make it a second time. So anytime you have an attack that can only be made once, which is often from a tactics card, or you have superpowers that enhance attack as a active power rather than a reactive one, then this card will give you a lot of value and can be really good counterplay to some of those powerful effects.
So George, I have a question, Pat, about Helios or even other things, even Domino's grenade bounce, right? Mm-hmm. Escort to Safety says, if at the end of the push target character, if the end of the push, the target character is outside the attacker's range or line of sight. Yeah. So this will stop Helios even if Helios is targeting you out of line of sight, right? You don't even have to take the push.
Yes. And that's true for you're right. That's true for any attack that ignores line of sight. You can, so it could be like you said, grenade bounce, Captain America shield throws, Hawkeye's trick shot, whatever it might be. In that, even though those attacks ignore line of sight, this rule still cancels the attack if you're out of line of sight after the pull. So yeah, absolutely. You could use this to cancel a attack that ignores line of sight. But bear in mind, most of those attacks, if you're still in range, they can just make them again. So it would have to be... Like
the Helios, right?
But I mean, it would have to be acute interaction like, a one-shot effect. I'm not even sure Helios ignores line of sight. Maybe it does. A one-shot effect like that, or like a power-up superpower, like we said. Like, for example, Iron Man using Friday AI on his homing rockets. Homing rockets ignore line of sight. You could pull your character, still be within range 5 for homing rockets, but the homing rockets will be cancelled and the power spent on Friday AI will be wasted.
Yeah, so it's got some cute interactions. And Helios does ignore line of sight. Helios is just ridiculous. Oh, cool. For me, it's a fringe card. I like it. It's a useful card. I just struggle with it making a 5. Like, could I jam it into my 10? Yeah. But I have a hard time. Like, are there matchups where you just look at the board and you're like, you know what? I'm going to take Escort to Safety.
I think it's really good counter for those specific powerful attackers. I think it's a really good tech card into things like Black Order, where it cancels Glaive's Edge and it cancels Death Decree on Thanos, which are two incredibly powerful attack enhancers, right? And Corvus, it means, like, if Corvus Glaive is attacking people, you have this card, like, anyone can play it. And as soon as he spends power up front, or Thanos spends power to enhance his attack, you can pull somebody away. That power is wasted, that superpower is used in the case of Death Decree, right? It can't be used a second time in a turn. And not only that, but Corvus is out of range and then has a much less optimal activation where he probably has to move once and attack. And so you've made him waste power, maybe made Thanos waste power, and made his activation a lot worse. And that's can be a huge effect. Way better at stopping Corvus than a lot of tactics cards.
Sure, and honestly, the more we think about it, like if Hulkbuster was running rampant, like if I was seeing a lot of Helios, I guess I'd consider slotting it in. And I guess one of the things that we covered in the past rules episode, but just a recap for people that haven't listened. So the way the timing chart works in the rule book, and you should go check it out, right? The attacker has to do everything on target first, then the defender will. So that's why the attacker for something like Death's Decree is going to spend you activate the superpower, spend the power on it, and then you as the defender, right, can redirect it with a bodyguard or try to cancel it out with an Escort to Safety or Gwen or something like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I guess, yeah, that's true. I guess you could take it as like a counter pick if you're really worried about something. Do you think the meta right now dictates you to be that concerned about these?
I think it's definitely a nice tool to have. It's one of those cards that can make your 10 as a tech card for matchups. And I think it's good into Black Order for all the reasons I just gave. I also think it's good into Avengers because it's pretty common that Avengers have some combination of Ricochet Blast, Helios Laser, and Bird of Prey. My experience is those cards are all great and they can easily fit some combination into their 10. They're all really powerful. And so having a counter card that can deny those effects when you're expecting to see several of them on the enemy team, it's pretty cool. Especially Helios Laser, where they have to pay all that power only for it to be wasted, is huge. So I think it's got a couple of powerful teams that it's especially good against. I also think there's some consideration to having it as a more active part of your game plan if you have aggressive short-range characters that you want to protect. So let's say you've got someone like Hulk, right? You want Hulk to get in there and smash. Maybe you want him to activate first and daze a character before they can activate. But maybe you don't love the idea of the whole enemy team being in range to retaliate against him. You know, you could have your powerful piece go in, smash, and then you can escort them to safety and they'll be further away from the rest of the enemy team and out of range of a lot of retaliating. What do you think? Have I sold you yet?
I'm going to heave it still. It just doesn't make sense. If it was... you have a compelling argument. The problem is, like, you only get 5 tactics, right? I mean, we say this all the time. You can take it to 10. Sure, I could probably make room and take it to my 10. I mean, basically, everything you've told me just makes me want to play more Gwen Stacy and doesn't really make me want to play Follow Me anymore or Escort to Safety anymore.
I mean, it is true that Gwen does this job every turn for 2 power instead of 3. But there is a lot to be said. Yeah, but there is a lot to be said for the fact this can be on anyone in your team. And okay, they have to have 3 power, which is not easy. But it can be really difficult to play around, especially later in the game, when their power is floating around and you can't really... Like, you could play around Gwen. You can take her out first, or you can position to block pulls specifically from her. But it's much harder to play around a whole team of characters who can do this on each other.
Yeah, I'm not disagreeing with you there. I think it'd be an interesting card if you didn't have strong affiliated cards, right? It all comes down to, like, what are we cutting to slot this in? And for me, I have a hard time seeing it being as one of the top 5 options I have. Would I enjoy the functionality and the play of it every time? Sure. And, you know, I'd hope I could turn it on round 2, you know, depending on the team you're with. It might not be till round 3. So I do like the card. I'm still heaving it. Sounds like you're going to sleeve it, though, Pat.
I'll sleeve it in the right team. I think you need to have a team where the characters are going to be reasonably close together, and that might depend on the crisis. And you need to have characters that can generate a decent amount of power that they sit on. Right, so it's not going to be for everyone, but I do like it, and it would definitely make my 10 in the right team for those specific matchups.
Yeah, and I mean, I might play it in... This is a weird one. Like, could I see myself playing this in some of my Avengers rosters? Yes, but we've kind of talked about it. There are some pretty compelling cards that Avengers normally takes, right? Could I see myself playing this in Guardians? Maybe. There's a couple Guardians characters I play that kind of end up with a glut of power. I have a lot of characters all over the place, so I'm commonly within range 3 of someone else. You know, I've been doing the Ghost Rider thing that we've talked about, so I have the centerpiece model, you know, a lot of power moving Ghost Rider around or vice versa. So, you know, maybe in Guardians I could see myself doing it, but for general stuff, I don't think I'm... I've been playing Web Warriors lately, and I just don't have the power.
I don't think you need it in Web Warriors, although it would be a huge headache to play around it, plus Lifesaver, plus, like, Lethal Protector, but...
Until they're like, oh, you have 3 points of power total on the board. And I'm like, yeah. Right.
Yeah, it's probably a bit of an idle threat in that team. I like you mentioned Guardians, though. It seems pretty cute to use it with Rocket and Groot and pull them into bodyguard range and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think you could do some cute stuff in Guardians for sure. So, all right, Pat's sleeving it. I'm pretty much heaving it. And let's get on to an affiliation that does not hurt for power. You know, Dormammu came out in August. Pat and I did an episode on him, and today we're going to do an affiliation review of Dark Dimension. And I thought, Pat, we could start with, like, how do we evaluate affiliations? What are the kind of 4 pillars we look at?
Sure. So to recap for our listeners, the 4 pillars we look at, the 4 things that make up an affiliation. Firstly, the leaders, right? In the case of Dark Dimension, there's one of those. And when I say leader, I mean, what does the actual character do? because you're going to be taking the leaders almost every single time you play an affiliation. So their skill set, what they do on the table, massively impacts how that affiliation plays. You know, Wakanda is known as a control affiliation because Black Panther has automatic pushes and you're always taking Black Panther, right? And characters like Miles and Magneto go a long way to influencing how people see their affiliations on the table. After the leader, look at the leadership and what does that do for everyone on the team? How does it impact their playstyle? We look at the tactics cards and then we look at the affiliated characters. Affiliated characters are really important because they're the ones that are going to see the most play in the affiliation and they're also going to define the playstyle. But of course, with Dark Dimension, it gets a bit weird because there are no affiliated characters beyond Dormammu. And that is, it's going to be an interesting one to talk about.
I mean, you could say there are none, or you could say that they're all affiliated, right?
Right. But I don't think we want to be talking about how many characters is that, like 80, 90? I don't know. I've lost track.
I don't know. I can find out real quick. It's a lot of characters. Let's just, can we just say that?
Yeah. So we'll have to do something different for characters. But that's fine. We've got plenty to talk about with Dormammu himself. So let's talk about him as a leader first, right? Dormammu as a character. You're literally always playing him every time you play Dark Dimension. So, of course, he massively impacts how the affiliation plays. He's the most expensive base character in the game, right? At 8 threat. He's pretty tough. He does a lot of damage. And he brings his great leadership. What do you think of Dormammu, TT?
So I'm gonna ask you this question actually real quick here, Pat. Do you think Dormammu does a lot of damage?
Well, yes. Are we going down? Let me see if I can guess where you're going with this. Are we going down the path of for his cost? Like, are we adding that? Are we adding that rider to the question?
Because
in a vacuum, if you just line up all the characters in the game and you put the ones that do the most damage at the top. Yeah, top of the line or whatever. First in the queue. Dormammu's up there. He's in one of those top spots.
I agree.
But he might not be in the number one spot. And he is the most expensive character. So you're right. For his cost, his damage output is perhaps not that high.
Yeah, and if we could take a minute here, and we've talked around this and we've talked about it privately a few times. Like, that's one of the really, really interesting things with evaluating these very expensive high-threat characters. Is there still, for the most part, limited in the number of actions they can take, right? So you're going to get more actions at the lower end, and then valuing the fewer but more powerful attacks from a high threat character versus the more attack actions, even though they're weaker from the lower cost characters. It's just, it's always an interesting game that people play. And it's one of the reasons I like the game so much is it's not like 40K, right, where you can just do like a math exercise or something and come up with it.
Yeah.
There's definitely a lot of nuance involved. So when I think of Dormammu, I don't think he's a high damage. I get why you would say that. This is not the first thing that comes to my mind. And that's all I thought was interesting there. It was like we just had two very different opinions on the character kind of right off the bat.
Yeah. So when I say he's high damage, what I mean is his attack actions do a lot of damage. And if I'm a little bit more specific and I say that, would you agree with it?
Yes.
Okay, but the point that you're making is that if you want to get the most damage for your threat value, you would rather have several cheaper characters, and you'd think, spread that out, and you'll do more damage than you will with Dormammu.
That is my current running theory.
Yeah, I think that's also depends on a lot of stuff, right? And I think you'll definitely be correct in some circumstances. There might be others where Dormammu gets the edge, but my gut feeling is you're probably right most of the time. And Dormammu, you're not playing Dormammu specifically to do the most damage you possibly can.
Right, and it totally depends on your defensive stat line, right? Attacking a character with lower defensive stats, you're going to have a better time with multiple middling range dice pools, right? Attacking someone with higher defenses, you're going to have a better time with a higher dice pool. So, okay, so if we agree that Dormammu isn't the best for pure damage output, right? Is that an accurate statement, Pat?
Right. Yeah.
Do you think he's a good character for scenario play?
So as a character ignoring his leadership, no, not really, because what is he doing? He's pretty fast. He's on the largest base, 65mm, with a medium movement. He's size 5, which means he's effectively flying for the purpose of moving over terrain. And he's got not of this dimension.
Yeah,
the range 2 place, which on the big base is pretty far. So he's one of the faster characters in the game. And then he's generating extra power because of his leadership. Oh, he's actually got flight. That's funny. Okay. I didn't realize he had flight because the model's not flight, but whatever. So he's fast and he's got multiple power. So he is good for scenario play in that he's good at abusing certain crises. And when I say abusing, I mean he's good at doing unconventional things to get ahead early, especially on extracts. He's good at moving to where he needs to be relevant, and spending power to interact with things. But he's not good at controlling the enemy team, which is one of the things that we would often consider when answering that question about, are you good on crises, right? He doesn't really stop the opposing team from interacting in any way, except from killing them.
Right. And the only reason I want to lay that out there is, so we agree, he's not inherently skewing one way or another better than something, right? There's not like a predisposed disposition for the character, which I think is one of the really interesting parts of Dark Dimension, is there's a bunch of different ways you can build it. And really at his core, right, the best thing Dormammu does, in my opinion, is gives your entire team a whole bunch of power. And it comes down to, are you willing to pay whatever threat tax you want to apply to Dormammu in order to receive these additional power in other characters?
Right. So let's transition then to talking about his leadership. And I think you're right. The leadership is the really compelling thing about him, right? The fact that you're giving every character on your team, including him, that second power, every round of the game. Sometimes they get more power and take some damage. But I agree with you that bonus power is like a universal increase in the value of every character on your team. And I agree with you that on his own merits, Dormammu probably isn't, quote-unquote, worth 8 threat if he were an unaffiliated character. I mean, he can't be an unaffiliated character, so we can't really put that theory to the test. But you're right, it's like, if his leadership weren't on the table, he probably wouldn't be worth 8 threat. And his leadership does a lot to make the other characters on his squad pick up his slack. Right, by enabling them to be better at interacting, or just better at whatever it is they do as a character.
Couldn't you cloning Bangs Dormammu so that he's not your leader for a game? Yeah, you can. You can.
Exactly. I think yeah. Okay. Good luck with that one.
That's all I'm saying. Okay.
Okay. I would put to you that it's very hard to test if he's worth his sweat when you have to have Mr. Sinister spend 3 tokens for 6 rounds of the game. You have to somehow get to round 7 and bring on Dormammu in order to then test him for a single round. Is he worth his sweat?
No, it's only half, right? So you only need 16. Oh, no.
Right. Yeah, okay. And you can put 3 in a turn.
All right, you're right.
GK. They've thought of that one. No Dormammu cloning bags for us.
Disappointment. Okay, so sorry, back on target here. Yeah. So we've got Dormammu, and I agree with your assessment there. So which direction do you... Well, actually, I guess we should finish out. So Flames of the Fault Line, Faultine, excuse me.
Faultine, yeah.
Literally had this conversation last time. This character and each other character you control gains 1 additional power in the power phase. If another ally character has 6 or more power, it suffers 1 damage. Addition, right, he is Master of the Realm of Darkness. When this character suffers damage from an enemy attack, it gains 1 power instead of power equal to the damage suffered. When another ally character is damaged by an enemy attack or by Flames of the Faultine, this character gains 1 power. So interesting power generation on himself. Great power generation for his compatriarchs. And he's got a couple affiliated tactics cards too, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the tactics cards are pretty cool. the number one card that I think gets talked about the most is Dark Restoration. That's the reactive card that Dormammu plays in the cleanup phase. It costs 6 power, and it lets you return a character of threat value 3 or less that was KO'd back onto the table within range 2 of Dormammu, fully healthy, no damage, no effects, no nothing. So just brand new character to replace the one you lost.
Yeah, obviously incredibly powerful there. And as we kind of went over, it's not that hard for Dormammu to end up with 6 power.
Right. So we can go into that one a bit more. But as we mentioned both of them, I'll just speak about the other one, which is Dark Empowerment. A Dark Empowerment is active. Anyone in the affiliation can play it. So that can be any character in your team. You pay 1 damage to play the card. And then you pick another character within 3 of the active character. And the next attack the active character makes, for every point of damage it deals, you give that other character power. So you're making an attack, hopefully causing damage and powering up somebody else on the team.
So obviously I love Dark Restoration. I don't really like Dark Empowerment. I get it works really well with Dormammu if you need like a power spike, but like I've never really had power issues with Dormammu. Have you?
So yeah, it's definitely weird, isn't it? Because like Dormammu's the other characters under Dormammu get so much power from his leadership, and they get punished for having too much power by taking extra damage. So I've never felt the need for a tactics card. Like you said, when we're talking about escort to safety, right? Those tactics card slots are precious. I don't feel the need for a tactic card to give someone more power when I've already got the leadership doing that and it's so consistent. And for Dormammu himself, like, I guess there's... I can see times where the power is nice, but actually, like, Dormammu doesn't use power that well because... like, he's generating 2 a turn at least, often more if his allies are getting damaged in the power phase with flames. He might be getting more than 2 in the power phase. And then that usually gives him enough to use Knot of this dimension, which is his teleport. And frankly, after that, you've only got 2 other ways of spending power, right? You've got his spender attack, and you've got Feel the Power of Darkness. And they're both fine, like, they're not bad. But I'm not so crazy that I don't love them so much that I want to devote a tactics card to maybe powering up Dormammu enough to use them.
Yeah, that's honestly... yeah, yes, I felt very similar in my playing with him. Now, like you said, it's clearly made for him a way to get him more power. It's just, okay, what do you do with it? I mean, Incantation of Obliteration is good. I mean, it's 8 dice? I don't know.
Yeah, the problem with it, right, is it's just unreliable because the trigger effect on it is... I love how wacky it is, but it requires a crit, a hit, a shield, and a failure, right? So that even with 8 dice, it's not very likely you're going to roll that specific 4. And without that, like, the attack is not worth 5 power. Right, when you have a 6 dice attack for free or an 8 dice attack that costs 5, it's only if you get the trigger that you feel like that's worth it.
Yeah, I mean it's more likely than not to roll in on 8 dice, right? But it's still not super.
Oh, often. I think it's below 50%.
Eight dice, only 2 of them are 1 and 8, right? The other 2 are 2 or 1 and 4.
Yeah, but you need exactly those 4 on the 8 dice, so you're dictating 4 of the 8 sides.
Correct. So you end up with the diminishing probability for every other one, right? So you end up with 1 in... I'll do the math later. I don't have... I mean, I guess I can pull up a calculator.
Well, let me just Google this, and I'll see what Xavier Protocol says. Oh my gosh, he did a lot of maths for this.
It's not... I don't understand why you're surprised.
Okay, so trusting good old Xavier Protocols at face value is that there is a 28% chance to trigger this. So about 1 in 4.
don't know why my mental math is so off. I'll do my math off camera. And right now I will apologize for being that far off.
Well, that's okay. So assuming that's correct, I mean, that's, for me, that's the problem with his spender. It's just unreliable. And if it's only going to give you the effect you really want, the reason you're using it is for that trigger. It only gives you that trigger 1 in 4 times. I don't feel like I'm missing much if I don't use it.
Yeah, either way, I think it's a fair assessment, right? It's not good enough to warrant taking a tactics card for.
Right. And then the other problem with the tactics card, which we haven't mentioned yet, is the fact it's one of those unreliable cards where you can play it and it just might not do anything, right? Because you have to play it before you make your attack. And attacks can whiff, right?
Yeah, they can escort to safety.
Yeah, escort to safety gets this card, right? Another great example. So I feel like that card is one of those affiliated cards where you can take it and it's perfectly playable and it does the thing you want okay, but you just don't really need it. I also think I'm a bit lower on Dark Restoration than UTT. I personally don't rate Dark Restoration very highly.
That's interesting. I mean, it's the best Dark Dimension team's tactics card. I don't consider it nearly as high as the other ones, but I have never played Dormammu without taking this card. Are you saying that you would play games without this card?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay,
interesting. And when we reviewed Dormammu, we were both high on it, right? I think we both agreed that it was an almost must-take, an affiliation-defining card. I've cooled down on it a lot in the games I've played with and against Dormammu. And there's a couple of reasons for that. The first is the threat value. The fact that your character has to be 3 or less threat value. And that means that it puts pressure on your squad building in a way that I don't like, because there's a lot of really good 4-threat characters with Dormammu. But then it creates this tension where if you're taking those more expensive characters, then either your opponent has more opportunities to ignore Dark Restoration by beating up the more expensive characters at Dormammu, or you're just not playing Dark Restoration, even if it's in your 10, because you're taking those expensive choices. So that's my first knock against it.
Okay, so let's circle back to this in a second, because I think now we're getting into list building, which I think is probably the bulk of this episode, even though we're 30 minutes in already. basically, if you're playing Dormammu in Dark Dimension, we've agreed that you really like the leadership. Dark Restoration's fine, Dormammu's fine, but it's the leadership that we are building around, right?
Yeah, you're not building around Dark Restoration.
And correct, I agree there.
Now, don't get me wrong, Dark Restoration, I think, was a lot better when you could play all you've got and you had a rate to KO your own characters. But that's off the table now, and I think Dark Restoration is a much more narrow card, just because the second knock against it, KOing doesn't happen till late in the game. And although it's an incredibly powerful effect, it's not an effect that necessarily happens when you need it to happen. And I've seen plenty of games where Dormammu can play it, but it's too little too late, because he can't necessarily bring that character back the moment it's KO'd, or even if he can, it might not matter. Right? Maybe just denying that character's activation for that round was enough to seal the game.
Yeah, I do agree with your sentiment there, and I think this comes down to now in list building, right? I feel like you need to have a plan if you're going to take Dark Dimension into your 5, and I think that's either aggressively jamming a piece that is hard or difficult to ignore, to your point, or finding some way that you can help your character flip over.
Right, finding ways to damage them or...
Right, like all you've got was obviously the perfect way to do it, right? No matter the cost is another interesting card that you could toss out there. There are there are other ways to do it is what I'll say. And I think those are important to kind of leverage Dark Restoration. Are we ready to just jump into characters? Do we need to talk about Dormammu more?
So I do think... Let's talk about both, because I think when we're talking about characters, obviously, we can't talk about every character. You mentioned already that the leadership is a big reason why you're playing this affiliation. I think the other big reason is if you just really like Dormammu and you think he's cool and you want to see the biggest, baddest character in MCP blow people up.
I agree with that. I think I do think it's a really, really interesting way to make your roster dual affiliation by giving up the absolute minimum amount of slots.
Right, to have him as just a threat of, I could be taking Dormammu instead of what I'd normally play.
And I think that can be a really compelling reason to slot him in there.
Yeah, that's fair. So the reason I wanted to add the point about Dormammu being cool and taking him in a team just because you want to play him and make the most of him is I see squad builder with him and that his affiliated characters go one of those three ways, right? Way number one, you're trying to leverage the leadership and you're taking characters specifically because of their synergy with the extra power generation. Way number two, you're trying to make the most of Dormammu and you're taking characters specifically because of their synergies with Dormammu. How do they support and enhance him? And there's actually a long list of characters that do that, right? And then option number three, the last one you mentioned, which I think is a great point, is you're not doing either of those things, but Dormammu is like a wild card and you're just playing some other affiliation and then Dormammu will lead them into battle sometimes. But when he does, you're probably leading on one of both of those previous points, right? And who you pick to go with him.
I would agree. You're either making like a Voltron list where Dormammu really needs to shine and he's just going to literally daze and KO for 3 to 4, 3 to 5 characters, or you're really leveraging the additional power and maybe dipping into Dark Restoration with that.
Yes.
And then also, we haven't even gotten into the issues of building rosters with an 8-threat leader.
Yeah, it's a challenge, for sure. So, yeah, I do think that's the two ways to look at it. And I think we should talk about characters in both those different categories and have a short list of characters we like for both those options. Which one do you want to start with?
I don't like the supporting Dormammu path, so I would rather talk about the what characters get the most out of the leadership.
Fair enough. The more sensible choice.
I think so.
Okay.
So I have a question for you, Pat.
Mm-hmm.
How much do you worry about a character's ability to spend power as opposed to having 6 or more power and taking a damage?
I worry about it quite a lot. Because I think it's a big problem that you have to plan for when you play with Dormammu's leadership. It really is a double-edged sword. And the problem is your characters are getting all this extra power, right? That's great. It means they could act independently regardless of who's attacking them or what they're attacking, right? Cool. They could do good things. Brilliant. But that all that stuff makes them more dangerous targets. And it changes their power economy so that attacking them is more enticing than it normally would be, right? Because, of course, the big rubber banding mechanic in MCP is if I damage you, you get power. So if I attack you, you get rewarded and your next activation is more powerful. Well, if you're already getting rewarded, I might as well attack you, right? If you already get to do exactly what you want because all of your affiliated characters are designed to have that extra power, then the downside for me attacking you is less, but my reward for attacking you is higher. Because as well as doing damage to you, that extra power I give you turns into more damage. And if I pile damage on top of damage, well, guess what? Your characters die. And then all of those synergies go out the window. So I think as the opponent, you're really strongly incentivized to beat up the Dark Dimension characters and ignore Dormammu as much as you can. And I know that maybe contradicts what I said about Dark Restoration, but I still think it's the case that as the Dark Dimension player to get around to finally answering your question. Yeah, you don't want to be taking unnecessary damage if you can avoid it, because it really add up and your opponent can punish you for it really hard.
Okay, so do you have a character to lead us off with, Pat? Do we want to start with a threat value? How do you want to tackle this?
Let's talk about a few of the more popular or like common choices that you see, because I think when we're talking about an affiliation review, we've got to talk about the stuff that people are actually playing, right? Otherwise, it's more speculation. So I want to talk about a little cluster of characters first, which is Web Warriors.
Yeah,
sorry if I've stolen your thunder there. I knew you had it in mind.
No, I was...
Yeah, it's the default.
Yeah.
So I think it's good to mention, right? Because it's the default for a reason. And the Web Warriors specifically are a big bunch of the affiliated Web Warriors are very flexible characters that are very good on crises, and generally don't have enough power to use their effects, and generally are really good with just a second point of power. So example characters, Spider-Man Miles Morales, Corset Spider-Man, Ghost Spider, Venom, Black Cat. These characters make incredible use of Dormammu's power, and it turns all of those characters up from being good to being really superb.
I agree with you with all of them. And I think all of those characters are... I think it's also very easy to threaten a Web Warriors roster and have a different way to go with Dormammu as well.
He plugs in so nicely.
It's like you said, right? It's the bog standard for a reason. It's very good. It's very effective.
Yeah. I mean, I do think there's a debate to be had about whether if you want to do the Web Warriors game plan, maybe you're just better off spending 8th threat on other Web Warriors rather than Dormammu. But I don't think the answer there is clear. I do really like that it's a different take on Web Warriors, where you get to he's almost like a third leader for them, right? In that you can just totally play your normal affiliated team, and the leadership is so good. And Dormammu himself obviously is perfectly happy to benefit from Lifesaver is a great support piece for him, Lethal Protector. So there's some cross synergy there as well. It's not just about pumping those characters up.
Yeah, so I guess, right, theoretically, the benefit of Web Warriors Dormammu, or Dark Dimension Web Warriors, is, in my mind, the turn one plays you can do with Web Snare out of the box, right?
Mm-hmm.
I am bringing a couple characters that have Web Snare out of the box. Miles also has, can't think of the name, Web Swing, whatever it's called.
Yeah.
Spend 2 power, move myself range 3, get some extra stuff. So mm-hmm. It's like, how much does this change my early opening? When my opponent knows anything they move to the middle of the board, I can pull in and just start pounding on things, including with Dormammu. And I think, yes, right, that would have to be the compelling reason to do it.
Yes. They can also do some really powerful scenario plays, right? With Black Cat and Advanced R&D, you can threaten to double long move and steal an extract from someone at the end of the round and just get up on victory points straight away. With Amazing Spider-Man, the 5-threat Peter Parker, and Advanced R&D, you can long move and swing to get your opponent's hammer that's just off their deployment zone and then long move backwards. You can threaten all kinds of weird situations with those characters. And it's a fun roster to play if you want to do unusual stuff and keep your opponent guessing about what your play is going to be.
Yeah, I mean, Miles Morales can Venom Blast on turn 1-2 with an Advanced R&D, right? So like, yeah, I said, you just have these myriad of turn 1 options, which just speeds up the normal Web Warriors game plan. Like, can I get an earlier advantage?
Yeah.
And then can Dormammu kind of grind it out in the middle while I win on scenario? And the answer is sometimes. Oh,
yeah.
I prefer regular Web Warriors, but it's been fun when I've played it. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah,
it's a nice palate cleanser.
Yeah, for sure. I like it a lot. So, aside from that particular pocket of cool synergy, what other characters are really getting a lot out of Dormammu's leadership?
I think Magic loves the Dark Dimension.
Oh, yeah?
We talked about it before. She's one of those characters I think you can jam. Just jam into people. She does enough damage that you can't ignore her. And we talked about it, I think, when we did Magic, she's a little bit fragile. But she's offensive enough that I think you can't ignore, right? Because she's really close to just soul sorting twice every round, especially with like a range 2 limbo step every round from the Dark Dimension. And if she is able to get a little bit of power on her, right, whatever her spender is, Dark something, right, for just that 6 dice Mystic, I think she just applies a lot of pressure onto them, utilizes the power pretty well, can dump it just fine, so I'm almost never worried about something. And she is that 3 threat, so it's a character I feel like my opponent has to deal with. They're going to daze and KO her eventually. Like, she's not just someone you can sit in the corner and ignore. And that's kind of what I'm looking at, right? Someone that utilizes the power well, they can't really ignore the character, so they'll come back with the Dark Dimension.
Yeah, so that's maybe a different way to build a squad that's benefiting from the leadership. And you could take that theory and apply it across the team, right? Which is, instead of taking characters that want to do their normal victory point focus game plan with extra power, you could just take killing machines, right? You could take characters like Magic, characters with charge fit perfectly into this plan, right? And can all charge on turn 1 with his help. So you could have teams of like power hungry killing machines that get even better and more efficient with Dormammu, right? So example might be something like a 17 threat team of Dormammu, Magic, Baron Zemo, and Valkyrie, right? Send them all in. If one of them gets KO'd, bring them back with Dark Restoration. Just keep on beating people up with efficient fighters plus Dormammu's own big blasts.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And I'm not saying one way is right or another, but like Magic, if you just want to jam. I think Hood's another really interesting character for it, that I've liked with it. I mean, those two characters kind of jump to mind. Is there anyone that you really like?
I love your suggestion for Hood because, of course, Healing Dormammu is great and he's awesome at using power. I don't have any other particular suggestions, but I want to note that some of these characters we've mentioned naturally bring us to the second area we talked about, which is characters that support Dormammu, right? Hood's healing. We mentioned Lifesaver on Ghost Spider. Baron Zemo offers a reroll to Dormammu on his attacks, making him a bit more consistent. Are there any other characters that you've enjoyed supporting Dormammu?
I mean, any additional place effect you can get on Dormammu, I think, is pretty big. If you're trying to leverage Dormammu just smashing everyone, right? He needs two things. He needs rerolls, theoretically, and then he needs some way to get into position. So, yes. Like, can you provide those two things?
Yeah. So I think the two ways that I like most for placing him, way number one is Lockjaw, because that's just a range three place. And that is, I mean, it's a lot of threat to move Dormammu, but it does move Dormammu a long way. And I think that's kind of cool.
It's interesting you mentioned Lockjaw just because he's... I just don't like the action economy of having Lockjaw and Dormammu on the table at the same time.
Is it, that's, you don't that's think 11 he does threat. Enough damage for their threats?
That's 11 threat. Like, and Lockjaw just like, what is he? He's the best boy, and you pat him.
Yeah, he moves Dormammu around. What more could you want? You're playing Dormammu. You want Dormammu to start at the middle of the table, right? So he can shoot people?
Yeah, I agree. okay, so what about Clea?
Ooh, so Clea's a bit more sensible, isn't she? In that she could contribute some attacks. I mean, thematically, she's a really cool choice. She's Dormammu's niece, daughter, something. So she definitely fits there. Rage 2 teleports fine. And she's also a three threat.
Yeah.
Sorry, yeah, as in you place Rage 2.
Correct, yep.
Dormammu. I mean, I don't know. Is she offering more than Lockjaw? You're getting less direct support for Dormammu, but you're getting a more functional, independent character. So she's a bit of a compromise choice, right?
Correct, yeah. You're using her alliteration builder, or alliteration spender, right? Because it only costs three. You're moving Dormammu not as far, but I just feel like you're getting better activations than you are out of the dog. My other issue with Lockjaw is, like, when he's not... I guess he's going to have tons of... I don't know. I play a lot of Lockjaw. It's just kind of... Yeah, I get it. Okay. He throws stuff. He puts an extra die on things. He helps. It's just 11 threat. That's just a lot of threat out of the two of them.
Yes. So I like where you're going with this point, though, which is dedicated support pieces for Dormammu, maybe not the best way to go, because although Dormammu is strong, he's not necessarily cost-efficient to support. He's fairly self-sufficient, right? He can already teleport himself, for example. He's quite tough. Maybe you don't need to heal him. Like, I wouldn't necessarily advocate for taking Wong to heal him every round, right? It's just not an official use of threat. But...
I was going to cut you off. But go
yeah,
ahead.
Go for it.
I didn't Slide even cut there. You off. You saw me make a face, so stop talking. You cut yourself off.
I did. You cut me off. What were you going to say?
I cut you off visually? I don't know if that's a fair thing. But that's one of the reasons I like Hood and Magic. They're able to support Dormammu a little bit, either through Journey Through Limbo or... I can't remember the name of Hood's heal. But they're still able to contribute in other ways, and that's why Clea to me is just kind of a hedge in that direction.
Yes, I agree. I think characters that benefit from Dormammu's leadership and are self-sufficient, but could also help Dormammu, are really good choices. And in addition, especially to Hood, and another one who I think is really high up there, I've mentioned several times, is Ghost Spider, and Baron Zemo. These are all, for me, like top-tier options that synergize with him and each other and work well on their own. There's also several good four-threat options, right? And I think the number one four-threat choice is Medusa. Because Medusa has one of the best ways to place Dormammu and also is just a fantastic standalone character in her own right.
Medusa is amazing. Is she the best? I hadn't considered. She's really good. I'm not going to say she's not the best.
So if it's not clear, what I'm talking about here is Royal Decree. And Royal Decree is you take a model within range 2 of yourself and place it within range 1 of yourself. So you could activate Medusa before Dormammu, say on turn one. She's got two power because she's in Dark Dimension. That's how much Royal Decree costs. She medium advances in front of Dormammu. She's standing range two in front of him. She places him range one in front of herself, and you've done a range two, her base, and a range one plus Dormammu's base. And so you've moved Dormammu front to front about 8 inches. A little bit less than Lockjaw's teleport, but for one less power on a much better character who can just then do good things all game long. And she can also, of course, bounce herself off Dormammu's base in future turns to get herself into the action. She can position her and Dormammu back and forth as you need, right? Like, you can have Dormammu teleport forwards, attack a bunch of people, she could teleport him back, or she could bounce forward off him and then teleport him forward again. You can do all kinds of interesting leapfrogging, and she is a piece who dishes out enough damage in her own right, in addition to that really good support.
Yeah, I like her a lot. Like, I like her a lot more than I like Lockjaw. And I think, to your point earlier, Pat, I think one of the flaws people come into sometimes with Dormammu is they'll go, well, Lockjaw can be brought back with Dark Restoration. And the question is like, okay, who cares, right? Like, it just doesn't matter. Yeah. I would much rather have Medusa in that situation.
Yeah. So for me, Medusa is the premier teleport choice because she does it really well, but she also does her own stuff well. And so she ticks that box. I've seen some people say that Shuri is a really good choice with him. I've not tried that myself, but I can imagine that giving Dormammu a lot of rerolls is fantastic, and she can certainly spend the power with her upgrades.
Yeah, I mean, I can see the appeal is what I'll say. Okay, so if you're taking Shuri, Are we just going whole hog on, like, scenario control then?
Maybe. Because Dormammu benefits from rerolls more than most, right? Because he gets to count skulls as successes. So she is going to be helping him dish out more damage than she would help the average character. So you're not necessarily having to go all in on scenario pushes, but obviously anytime you have Shuri, her pushes need to be part of your game plan. She's not going to be contributing to damage output as much as a dedicated fighting three-threat character is. So I guess you are doing it somewhat. Maybe the Rakundans in general are a consideration similar to the Red Warriors, because, of course, Bodyguard on Okoye is another really good support synergy with Dormammu.
I'm drastically oversimplifying, right? But, like, the Dark Dimension leadership basically makes Okoye, like, pre-nerfed Okoye.
Has the power to bodyguard.
Correct, yeah. And I know other things happened, but yeah, you definitely could play Okoye that way. Mm-hmm. Have not tried to play Dormammu super scenario specific. I'm just trying to piece out my head how it would work together. I guess, yeah, I mean, Shuri works. Sure, you can take Shuri. Yeah. I'd rather take Zemo. I'd rather just kill people. For me, if I'm taking Dormammu, I just want to kill people. I just want to punch people in the face, send them to the Dark Dimension, no bargaining, just killing people.
Yeah, that's totally fair. And I think the ways to do that are you either take other badass killing machines and use the leadership to power them up, or you take pieces that make Dormammu better at killing, right? And I personally, for me, that like the affiliated tier list for Dormammu goes something along the lines of characters that do both are at the top, like characters that support Dormammu and are great in their own right and form a cohesive game plan are at the top. And then slightly below that are characters that love his leadership. And then below that are characters you bring just to power up Dormammu. And then below that is everyone else, with a final bottom tier of characters you shouldn't bring, who are characters that don't benefit from the leadership and don't do anything particularly special. Like, I don't think you want to be bringing characters that have no problem with power and have a hard time spending it. So, for example, I don't think Hawkeye is a character that I would strongly consider for Dark Dimension.
Yeah, Hawkeye, yeah, I agree that you don't want Hawkeye out there. And my thing with Shuri is, like, I would just rather have Ghost Spider. Like, yeah. I would rather be pulling people towards Dormammu. I mean, I guess you're theoretically leveraging her just having a ton of upgrade rerolls.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot of rerolls.
Yeah, until she dies, I guess.
Yeah.
But then you bring her back, right? I mean, that's the weird catch-22 you get into there. My biggest concern is, if I take Shuri, I probably have two attack actions that are dealing two damage a round. and I'm already worried about the value of my actions because I'm taking an 8-threat leader. That is what I'm trying to distill, essentially, in a nutshell.
Yeah.
I acknowledge that it's not like Gwen Stacy's attacks are like incredible or something like that. Yeah, but they're not fundamentally limited to one damage. I do agree. Sorry, back to topic. The Medusa is the premier four. I honestly don't. There are fours I like. I mean, I'll mention Venom. I think Venom makes really, really good use of it. I actually think Goblin is an interesting one. Doesn't have the same upside, I think, but like, you know, it can just kind of struggle with the power to kind of get going earlier. But I do think Medusa is kind of the premier four threat to the point where honestly, I didn't personally think about too many others.
I think Venom, like you mentioned, is another great choice. I think Rogue is in the conversation as someone. She's a charge character. She's like an upgrade to someone like a Zemo or a Valkyrie, right? She's a charge character who loves that extra power and she can spend it in later turns. She has no problem spending extra power. So there are other fours I think you can consider, but I agree that Medusa is my favorite.
All right. Are there any high threat characters you like? Like, if we just want to be totally crazy here?
Yeah, there's a couple. I don't love any of them. Like, I'm not advocating for planning for high threat characters in the team. I think four is about as high as I really like to go with Dormammu.
Well, I mean, I do like Amazing Spider-Man, and you already pointed that out, right?
Amazing Spider-Man. About him. Yeah, I like him a lot. I think he's a bit of a... Like, I wouldn't take him without a plan, right? I think you're taking him to try and really get an early advantage with his speed and the extra power generation. But I like him in specific circumstances. It seems to me like turning on Thor's charge would probably be good, but I don't know if it's necessarily what you want to be doing. I think you can just do that at a cheaper threat value. And then for other characters, I mean, there's something to be said for things like Hulkbuster being able to hit a run around one, but he also generates power pretty well. I have a bunch of caveats with five threat characters where I'm like, there aren't quite so many obvious synergies with the leadership. You're not getting quite as much bang for your buck, I think. Am I forgetting anyone?
I'm just going to throw it out there and just see what you think of it. And you can tell me I'm totally crazy. What do you think of Doctor Strange Sorcerer Supreme?
I like both Doctor Strangers. Doctor Strange Sorcerer Supreme is very good at spending power.
He's also very good at generating point power.
Yes, he generates three himself. He'll get a fourth from Dormammu. That can definitely bite him, right? He will often be taking extra damage from Dormammu's leadership. But that fourth power means he can be a five-threat Lockjaw and he can teleport Dormammu range three at the start of turn one. He can also do a lot of funny things on crises with that much power and his good maneuverability. And he can spend it, right? He's got really a good suite of abilities.
I mean, he kind of struggled. Like, he can spend it on the teleport, right? Mm-hmm. And then his spender is, well, I mean, they're Deadly Daggers, which only spends one. And then the problem you run into there is like, okay, then you have Shining Circle, which is just that area two explosion.
Shining Circle is really strong, though, and it can remove conditions on Dormammu and heal him and Dormammu. And that's pretty cool. Like, Dormammu's immune to a lot of conditions, but specifically shock is really annoying on him. So I don't hate those synergies. I hadn't really considered it, but now you mention it, it seems solid. He seems to be another character that ticks the boxes of benefiting from the leadership, being independent, but also having good synergy with Dormammu.
But they're 13 points together.
They are.
That's a lot. Aren't you like five wide and Guardians at 13 threat?
Yeah, probably. I mean, you could go five Riding Guardians at 11 threat, but yeah, they are a lot of threat. But I mean, it can be really fun to play that lower model count team, right? And it can be fun to be like three wide on a normal crisis. So I like it as an option. It's not one that I would personally be jamming into my roster, but I think it's a great inclusion. I'm glad you brought it up.
All right, so no other high threats that we really like here?
No, you're making me think about classic Doctor Strange now, who has a little bit of the same synergies, but yeah. No, I don't think you want to go higher, really. I think you want to have some nice options for your game plans with Dormammu in regards to victory points of murder. And realistically, I think you're basically always taking a second affiliation with Dormammu because
there's almost no reason not to.
I mean, so classic Doctor Strange, the only reason I do it is if every round my plan was to just Crimson Band's a Cyderac, right? Which isn't
well,
like that far-fetched.
Yeah, unless you just want to heal Dormammu and give him more defense dice.
And then we just go back to like, okay, like if we have, then we've got five threat of just keeping his eight threat character who already has like sub eight threat activations going. So he's committing so much to like, I really want Dormammu to be mediocre. And I'm just going to commit so much of my team to make sure he's mediocre.
I agree. It's not much of a dream. I've never seen it work. I don't love it. I also think there's a problem to be had with taking fragile five-threat characters in that I mentioned already how Dormammu's leadership incentivizes the other characters on his team to be attacked. I don't love, and this is maybe a knock against the Sorcerer Supreme as well, I don't love the idea of taking a five-threat character with 12 hit points and expecting them to survive very long when they're in the Dark Dimension.
I mean, that's a very fair point there. So we didn't cover that many higher-threat characters here.
No.
Right,
I mean, that's okay to say. I mean, it's natural, right? When you're building squads with an 8-threat leader, you're not going to have much room for high-threat characters.
Right, and again, that just circle back. Like, that's one of the reasons I'm high on Dark Dimension, because I normally end up with a bunch of decent mediocre threat characters. But to your point, right, are they going to get dazed out quickly? So where does that leave us with Dark Dimension?
I think when it comes to squad building, you want to be taking, like we said, you want to take characters that benefit the power and that have some amount of synergy with Dormammu, and you want to be taking lower threat characters, and you want to have specific combinations, at least in mind, for different threat levels, right? You want to make sure you know how many characters you're going to play at 14 threat. If you want, you absolutely want to be playing Dormammu at every threat level. If that's what you want, then what is your 14 threat team? Are you playing three characters wide? Are you playing Dormammu in 3/2s? Are you playing two characters, right? And you're playing like Dormammu and Magneto, I don't know. But you're basically playing somewhere between, you're playing like three characters average, right? And at some point, you're branching up to four. You're never going very wide. But for me, what I really want to be doing with Dormammu is playing around that 17 or 18 threat value and taking like Dormammu and 3/3s and maybe upgrading one of them to a 4, you know, or downgrading one to a 2, that kind of area where I'm taking efficient 2, 3, and 4 threat characters that synergize and trying to play Dormammu with three friends as much as I can.
Yeah, and I think that's why, you know, in the beginning of the podcast, we both talked about going dual affiliation. I would like the ability to not have to play Dormammu with some threats, because otherwise I feel like you have to build in some really interesting caveats there, right? I just want another affiliation that can handle 14 and 15 personally.
Yep.
And then everything else I'm probably happy handling with the Dark Dimension. That's one of the reasons they pair so well with webs.
Yeah, because you have a cheap core of like three threat characters. They also pair well with Wakanda, right? That has a 9 threat core. And honestly, you could pair them with basically any affiliation. But I, generally speaking, the more expensive the leader of the second affiliation, the less well they're going to pair, right? Because you're going to start having more overlap.
Yeah, that's very fair. So I like Dark Dimension in general, Pat. I think it's a cool addition to the game. I think it's one of those spaces that will, like, I think the way it's played will change dramatically, like, every couple seasons, so to speak, right? As some, like, weird savant with it picks it up and continues to workshop it. I don't think it'll ever be a super popular widespread affiliation.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that's cool, right? I think it would get pretty tedious if everyone felt like it was in their best interest to cram Dormammu into their roster, because the opportunity cost of doing that is not very high. So I'm kind of glad that we don't all feel compelled to have Dormammu as our 10th pick. And I really like that he empowers almost every character in the game to the point where his rosters can be pretty diverse. And if you've got a character you like and you like playing Dormammu, well, hey, you can just put them together and it's going to work out fine.
All right. Is there anything else we should cover with the Dark Dimension, or do we think we've talked in vagaries enough with Dormammu?
Yeah, I feel like we've only scratched the surface, right? And we keep talking, and like you said, we're a little bit vague, but also we're an hour in, and I don't know. I
do think there are bad characters to take with Dormammu, and I think that's probably important to bring out if we haven't been clear. I don't like dedicated support pieces, because I need action value out of what actions I do have in the table. I also think, to Pat's point, Dark Restoration can be a trap. Like, I don't ever want to take Lizard in Dark Restoration. Because, like, Lizard's whole shtick is, like, he doesn't... He's just awkward to kill. And my opponent's going to be like, all right, this is annoying, and you're just going to bring him back? I'm just gonna, I'm not going to deal with this guy. And the last thing is, like, Lizard just doesn't spend power that well. Like, he is a range 2 spender. It's like, okay, I just don't want to take Lizard. I think there are a bunch of characters that can be traps like that. So just be careful with your Dark Restoration.
Yeah, definitely. Even though some characters can be traps, I'd say most characters in the game, like the majority of the characters that exist for MCP, are pretty good with Dormammu and are worth trying out with him. And I'd encourage people to experiment with either your pet characters or just unusual combinations. He really can make a lot of characters shine.
So I do have one more question, I guess, before we close on the topic of this. How do you feel about characters like Nebula or Honey Badger with Dormammu? Like, I know a lot of times when he came out, people were taking Nebula. They're like, you have to deal with Nebula. I'm just going to bring her back. She's going to be a pain in the butt. But then a lot of times I'm like, you just have so few models that can interact on scenario. It's just an interesting decision to take her there.
I think that if I would play those characters, it would have to be on a crisis combination with very few crisis interactions, right? Like, if I'm playing Skrulls and Demons downtown, maybe I feel like I can get away with it. But the problem is, even then, Dormammu is taking up 8 threat. Those characters are taking up 2. That's 10 threat that's only on 1 point or only carry 1 extract. This is one of the reasons why I said before I'd like to take 3 friends with Dormammu whenever possible, right? Because I feel with a 4-character team, you can interact in a fair way on crises, plus you get the advantage of the extra power, which pushes you over the top. And I think you can, as long as you're going in with a plan, you can have 3 characters. But at that point, your plan is probably just murder, right? And you're probably not planning to get ahead on many crises with a 3-character strong roster.
Yeah, I think that's very fair. So hopefully the episode helped you with the Dark Dimension. You know, it's funny, Pat and I beforehand were like, I don't know how long this episode is going to go for. And here we are, 65 minutes in. So we do want to sincerely thank each and every one of you for listening to the podcast. If you're interested in supporting the podcast or AcrossTheBifrost.com, you can jump over to Patreon.com/AcrossTheBifrost. That pays for MCPDB, pays for Across the Bifrost, pays for Pat's microphone that doesn't work. You know, and it helps us out a lot. But we do want to thank each and every one of you for listening. We hope you tune in next week for a new episode. And until next time, everyone, cheers and happy gaming.
Somewhere across the Bifrost, way up high, there's a pod that I've heard of once in a lullaby. Skies are blue, and the dreams that you dare to dream really do come true.
Cool.
I don't know if we said anything, but we definitely talked for a long time.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know. I think we had a few good takeaways. I think our key takeaways are one of the tactics cards is not very good. The other one is not as good as you think it is. And characters that synergize with Dormammu and are good in their own right are your top picks.
But somehow it took us 65 minutes to say that. All right. All right. We're doing great.